The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 536, recorded on April 25th, 2019.
The 536th edition of the CD Gaming Podcast and 369th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
It's about time we had a gaming flashback. We haven't had one in months, so. And I chose one that I think probably everybody's played, or at least everybody's familiar with. You know, we're getting into games, and we actually got into this 2 years ago in which games are being on the gaming flashback, which we have this rule, they have to be at least 10 years old, and games that were actually released while the podcast was active are starting to pop up. So, TJ, what have you been playing?
I've been big into Mortal Kombat 11. It launched this week on Tuesday.
Yeah. I mean, there was news that there was a thing going around where they said that Dave Parra, who worked on Injustice 2, was worked to death on it. And then the person who stated it recanted, and it makes me wonder if NetherRealm told him to shut up or else. Because here's the thing, the idea that someone would die during crunches is not something that's out of the realm of possibility. As a matter of fact, we've had all these stories about the tremendous physical, you know, taxing that crunches have. I mean, you can be worked to death doing it. I can see where that would happen.
That's pretty terrible. I hope that didn't happen, but yeah.
But at this point, I've heard at least three accounts that NetherRealm Studios is not a very good place to work for as far as like interns go.
Yeah, I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire. Although Dave Parra, I don't know if he was an intern. I think he was worked on a lot of NetherRealm stuff.
Right. I was saying Dave Parra is one of them. The two other that I heard of were basically horror stories of what it was like to be an intern at NetherRealm Studios.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, developers, and when I say developers, I mean the people in the bullpen, you know, the cattle are going to have to unionize. It's gone on too far.
Yeah.
Right now we don't have a good we don't have a good atmosphere for I don't want to say atmosphere, but we don't have a good situation for unions right now. But at some point they're going to, you know, they're going to surge back up again, and something's going to happen. Because yeah. Basically what we have are 80-hour weeks, 90-hour weeks, and that is unacceptable.
That is insane.
As someone who belongs to a union, I mean, SAG-AFTRA is part of AFL-CIO. There's no way they would have this happen. Ever. No one should be working 80 to 90-hour weeks. Especially in a job like coding, because all you're doing is sitting in front of a computer and typing, and that can screw your brain too. I mean, if I'm writing for like an hour, I start to need to get away from the computer, and they can't, you know. And it's always, you know, well, you don't have to work 80 hours, you know, which is bullshit. Sort of like, yeah, you don't have to work that, but if you don't come in on Friday, you won't be coming in on Monday, sort of thing.
So
that is terrible.
One point that one of my colleagues made was that we have been starting to hear about this more, like you hear about Telltale now, and that's probably had a effect on like people being more open about situations in their workplaces.
What are you about Team Bondi? Remember the horror stories about L.A. Noir, and but we're hearing real horror stories about the Red Dead Redemption games. You know?
Yeah. So Rockstar, Telltale, things like that have like made it more commonplace for people to speak out against their situations. But I also kind of wonder if we didn't hear about this for the longest time because, you know, Ed Boon is kind of a darling in the video game space, and like Nobody wants to upset Uncle Ed, so like, I wonder if that had something to do with it. In any case, Mortal Kombat 11 is good. Yeah. I hope it's not good at the cost of somebody's blood, but it's good.
Well, there's virtual blood.
The game is pretty great. It's very, very tightened up on mechanics. It doesn't feel like there's a character that is just like over and above the rest. It's not really cheesable. There are definitely counters to everything, and like I'm really having a good time with one of the new characters that came out, the Collector. He was like a six-armed servant of Shao Kahn who his business is basically he goes around battlefields collecting tribute from people, and basically that meant stealing. So he's got all sorts of little artifacts that he's collected from people that he uses in his fights, and it's really enjoyable to play as him.
Yeah. I mean, well, the other thing is that there's also the leaked DLC. You know, one of them was Shang Tsung, who's already, you know, was confirmed already. But you have characters like the Joker, the Terminator, Ash Williams, Spawn, you know, Sindel.
I really, really hope that half of that list was a lie, because I am so sick and tired of the Joker.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be such a stretch. Oh, we're going to take his model from Injustice 2 and just plop him into the... I mean, it's been a while since Spawn has been in a fighting game. He was last in Soul Calibur, which one was it, 3, 4?
I totally get that DC is probably iffy about letting NRS pretty much murder their characters with fatalities unless they're like a villain like the Joker. That said, there are so many other better handled characters that NetherRealm has handled from DC that I would like to see someone else besides the Joker.
You know, I really want to see the Terminator. That would be interesting.
I mean, Scarecrow would be fun. Scarecrow would be a fun Mortal Kombat character.
Yeah, but they already have, you know, the voice of the Scarecrow has already been in their games, you know. Because in Injustice 2 is voiced by Robert Englund, who is also Freddy, and Freddy was in Mortal Kombat 10. Ash Williams,
Oh, no, Freddy was in Mortal Kombat 9.
Oh.
10 had Leatherface, Jason Voorhees, and the alien.
Right. Ash Williams, I'm sort of ambivalent about. I prefer him in a game like Poker Night.
Yeah, I mean, although Ash Williams versus Johnny Cage would produce some funny quips.
Yeah. I just want to see how the other characters would react to Joker. And some of them would know him already. I mean, Raiden knows him. I mean, he knows him from two games already. He's known him from DC versus Mortal Kombat and also from Injustice 2.
Yeah, but I'm happy to see Shiva's on the DLC, is possibly on the DLC list. Yeah, Fujin's been one that people have requested for a long, long time, and it's interesting. You know, this is the first Mortal Kombat since the very first one in which Reptile hasn't appeared as any sort of fighter. Like, you know, in the very first game, he was a secret fighter. You couldn't play as him, but he was there as a fighter.
You know what would be nice? You know what I'd rather see than Spawn? Let's bring Hellboy. I mean, Hellboy's more suited to Mortal Kombat than he was in Justice 2, really. Can you imagine his fatality moves?
Yeah. Spawn would fit in so perfectly in Mortal Kombat. I would be completely okay with that.
Yeah, technique. But Spawn's been done. I would love to see Hellboy in that thing. You know, and it might have happened. Maybe, you know, I don't know. The movie is so shit right now. It is one of the worst you'll see.
Really? I've heard like
it's what are you talking about? It's like 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm not talking about the Guillermo del Toro movies. No, I'm not talking about the Guillermo del Toro movies. I'm talking about the new remake that just came out.
Yeah, I've heard they got schlacked by critics, but I've also heard a lot of people say ignore the critics.
It's yeah, they're 13 years old. They're the same people who say ignore the critics on Suicide Squad. I would ignore them completely. The movie.
No, the
shit.
People that I've heard it from, the people that I've heard it from aren't people that are like say everything is good.
It's shit. No, trust me, I've seen it. It's shit. It's like two 12-year-olds wrote the script, and the visual effects are dreadful, and the makeup is dreadful. And if you go to see it, keep your eye on Hellboy's horn stumps. They move. They move a little bit. You can see them moving. That movie was made on the cheap. And they try to make up for it with a lot of cursing and a lot of boring violence. It's dull. Mm. It's dull. And there's no personality with Hellboy. I mean, the guy who plays him, who's from Stranger Things, he's fine. But, you know, he doesn't have any personality when it comes to Hellboy. And I'm saying that even if I never saw the first two Hellboy movies. And by the way, I did not like the second Hellboy movie, The Golden Army. I hated it. I liked the first one. But at least, you know, he has a personality in that film. I mean, just the fact that he saves kittens in one scene while fighting monsters. You there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I don't know. Like,
here's the thing. Wait for it to come out on video and then watch it on video.
Yeah, I won't. It's not something I'll go see in the theater. I'll probably wait for it to either hit Netflix or something like that.
Yeah. What have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Project Octopath. Octopath Traveler, I'm sorry, and I'm trying to complete it. I had gone, off onto other games for a little while there, and I'm actually in the phase of it where I'm completing everyone's Chapter 2 stories, and I'm also doing sub-jobs for each of the characters, so that way they can combine with, you know, say, a thief can use... the merchant's abilities and the, or you know, scholar's abilities or the fighter's abilities to augment their battle abilities in fights, so it makes them more powerful.
You know, we have good news for PC owners. It's coming out on PC. It's coming out on Steam. So for those of you who don't have a Switch, you'll be able to play it on PC in a few weeks.
Yeah, a lot of games are coming to PC as well, so that is good. I like that. It's a great game, and I think they might even be working on a sequel at some point, so that'll be interesting to see.
I wonder whatever happened to the Undertale sequel that's supposed to be coming out.
Deltarune came out. It has a Chapter 1.
Oh, okay. I don't know. So games are coming out when I don't even... Oh, wait, that came out? Like,
yeah.
Kingdom Hearts came out. I say, oh, Kingdom Hearts came out. Okay. I don't know if it's because there's so many games coming out, or maybe personally I'm just losing interest, or maybe I'm just not in the know anymore. I don't know. It's just
be like, all of that above.
Yeah. Although, you know, between this podcast and the last podcast, we got a lot of Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines too. And they actually released a video today showing the Thin Blood video, which, and apparently you start out as a Thin Blood. And you get to choose one of three settings. You know, I'm not going to call it a class. And, you know, but there are three different settings. And from there, after you get bitten, you'll have those settings as a base for whatever class you're going to be next. So, you know, we haven't really discussed it. TJ, are you excited about Bloodlines 2?
I never played the first game at all. So, like, okay. I don't know what I think of it.
Really?
Vampire. Great. No, I didn't play it. It wasn't in my interest.
Okay, I'll say the story is amazing, and you have John DiMaggio playing Smiling Jack, and he steals the show, but the combat is absolute shit. This is a game in which I have no problems, no guilt whatsoever playing on God mode. Because a lot of the stuff in it, you know, a lot of the tricky stuff has nothing to do with combat. It has to do with your decisions.
See, like, how are you going to sell me the game if you're telling me you should play this? The combat is shit.
I'm
going to
tell you right now. You just get the game, you put in the console command for God mode, and then you play it. Here's the thing. Like I said, it's a game in which the combat is almost secondary to everything else. Because a lot of it has to deal with finding clues, with your perception, and talking to people and having charm and all that stuff. Also, every class plays completely different. If you're going to play a Nosferatu, for instance, you can't let anybody see you. Because it's breaking the masquerade, and B, in certain cases, you can actually scare people to death just by looking at them. Or you can play as... after you play once, everybody always plays as the Malkavian. Because when you're playing it again, the Malkavian already knows everything that's going to happen in the game. And you get to derive a certain amount of joy from the Malkavian commenting on the game itself. Mm-hmm. For example, if you use a cheat code on yourself and raise your stats before you meet Smiling Jack, who runs the tutorial, Smiling Jack will actually get pissed at you for changing your stats with a cheat code. And the Mulcavian will just reply, well, the guy playing me wants to, or he'll say that Kane gave him the stats. You know, it's hilarious. Like I said, there's a reason why Bloodlines is so beloved and has nothing to do with the combat. It has everything to do with the story. And there's stuff I'm still finding in the game, and not even without the fan patches, which bring back dummy material. You know, I'm finding stuff that I never even knew was there. You know, it's sort of like Star Wars: The Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic. You know, when fans restored dummy content from that, like the HK-51 factory, they do this with. And by the way, Troika got screwed over big time by Valve because they would not let them release it because they wanted Half-Life 2 to be the first Source game. You know, and that was like over a year, and by the time it came out, it looked dated. So, yeah, I mean, there's some jokes, you know, there's some hidden things in which they're basically saying, fuck you, Valve, in the game, so. But, yeah, I've been playing Grand Theft Auto V. Yes, let's see, came out in, what, 2013? So 6 years after it was released. And I'm glad I waited till now because I hate the game with a white-hot passion. I hate it. I finished the game, I hate it. I just hate it.
Way through?
Well, yeah, I played through. I played the entire thing. I hate it because here's the thing. You'd think a game called Grand Theft Auto would have better driving physics. It would have better combat. It would definitely have better flight. You know, all the effort went into making the city, and that's it.
The flying was very difficult. I found that frustrating. The driving, it didn't bother me, and I think the combat was fine.
Yeah, the combat used the Red Dead Redemption thing in which if you kill someone at auto aims, that's fine, but, you know, still, it's just frustrating. And here's the thing. You know what I love to do in the first Grand Theft – well, not the first one, but the Grand Theft Auto 3? I would use some cheat codes, give myself all the weapons, give all the everybody else weapons, all of them, and then use the cheat code in which everybody went berserk. That's the kind of fun I like in a Grand Theft Auto 3. It looks more real, which makes the characters more cartoonish, which gives them an uncanny valley. And I couldn't stand Trevor. I wanted him dead, which is why it gave me the option to kill Trevor. I killed him. I obviously, you know, took the third option after I did that because the problem is they lock a lot of content behind characters, right? So yeah. Trevor had content. But here's the thing, you know. They make him truly awful, and I heard from some people that it's actually making fun of people who play Grand Theft Auto 3. But still, you know, here's the thing. When I play a character, you're asking me to identify with him. I cannot identify with Trevor. And the other thing is that these are Scottish people, and I think they liked movies like Lock, Shock, and Two Smoking Barrels too much because there's something I like to call the idiot plot. In which the plot can only go forward if everybody's complete idiots. Tell me that no one would have thought to take a gun to the back of Trevor's head and just shot him after 5 minutes had they not been complete idiots. Here's the thing. I want to be the characters in the game to be at least as smart as I am. I don't like playing a game in which people do stupid things for no other reason that they have to move this story along. You know? There are some games in which the characters are as smart as me, and they won't do things that, you know, The Wolf Among Us. No one does incredibly stupid things, unless you make them do it, but that's because you just want to press it. You know, take Mass Effect, you know. Everything Shepard does makes sense, and the only times it doesn't make sense is if you take that choice to do something completely stupid. You know, it doesn't force you to take choices A, B, and C, and they're all stupid. You know?
I did like Michael's story.
Michael was a good story, but the thing is that – and I liked Franklin's story too. But here's the thing. You know, when you kill Trevor, Franklin gets upset, and Michael has to tell him the obvious of why he's a shit person and why he deserved to die. You know? It's just – but the decisions they make in it, you know, there are other games I've played in which this is the problem I had with Red Dead Redemption 2. I was smarter than the characters. the characters in Red Dead Redemption 2 were really dumb. And by the way, that's also a Rockstar game. You know, I want to play a game in which I know what's it called. They know as much as me. You know, at least they're savvy enough to understand what's going to happen.
I'm really surprised that you played it all the way to an ending if you didn't like it that much. Like,
well, normally
you're the type that if you don't like it, you won't go along for the ride that long, and usually you're quick to send that stuff back. So what was it about Grand Theft Auto V that made you go all the way to the end?
If I failed a mission 3 times, they allowed me to skip it. That way I could just keep moving forward.
Ah.
At least, you know, there are certain missions which are so terrible in terms of gameplay. I was ecstatic that they allowed you to skip it. Like when you're jumping the motorcycle on top of the train as Trevor, it doesn't matter how you aim. I can never get it on. He'll just drive off or whatever, you know. And I hated that mission. If they said skip it, yes. If they had not allowed me to skip it, I would have just tossed it, you know, back to Gamefly and say, here, take it. I don't need it.
Yeah, but even then, you're the type that if you're just not having a good time, like, what was the redeeming – what got you through to the end of Grand Theft Auto 5?
I just wanted to see where it was going to take me. I heard there was multiple endings too. So, I mean, you know, I tried to do Trevor as least as possible, which is unfortunate because all of these – there's a ton of green question marks, and a lot of them are the rampages, you know. And those are okay because guess what? Now you're in a cartoon. Now I don't give a shit about Trevor because he's a cartoon character. But when you place a cartoon character in the middle of a – you know, here's the thing. When you watch Home Alone, he's dropping bricks on their heads and it's having realistic effects. But then you have one scene in which the character played by Daniel Stern grabs some electricity and turns into a skeleton. That's telling, yeah, this is a cartoon. Don't pay it any mind. That never happens in this. When Trevor murders two people in their apartment because he's a home invader, am I supposed to like that?
He snapped because he thought they were decent people and then realized they weren't, and
they were decent people. I mean, you have this person who's bullying you and what's it called, making a guy do illegal stuff, and his wife pulls out a gun and tells him to get out. Yeah, that's a perfectly reasonable thing in his head.
Didn't say it was reasonable. I'm just saying he snapped.
I don't care about why he did it.
That's the point of
In a situation like that, Trevor wouldn't get 2 days without being arrested because people will ask where he is. People will ask where she is. They'll do an investigation. In this game, if you die, you just wake up in the hospital. That's the other problem I have with this game. There are no consequences for your actions. None.
There are consequences. You can lose your money if you die.
No, oh, please. Oh, I lose $5,000. Well, gee, I have $250,000. That's not much of a cause. Here's the thing. Let's go back to Mass Effect. Ready? If you kill Rex, that has a consequence for the rest of the game. And you're stuck with Reeve, who is one of the worst leaders that Krogan could have. And it's all your fault because you're the one who killed Reeve. I mean, you're the one who killed Rex. You know, everything has an action. If you don't go save the children at the Grissom Academy, well, guess what? Jack gets captured and tortured and turned into a slave that you have to kill later in Mass Effect 3. Everything has consequences. In Grand Theft Auto 5, nothing has consequences. You die, you wake up in the hospital. Here's the thing. I found it was better to die than be captured by the police, because if the police capture you, you lose all of your ammunition. It's easier just to commit suicide, lose $5,000, and still have all your shit. You know, if a mission wasn't going well, I would just get out of the car, put a sticky bomb on the car, and blow myself up.
Yeah, but that's not even new to Rockstar games. Red Dead Redemption doesn't even really punish you that much if you die or whatever.
Yeah, but here's the thing. At least the characters were likable for the most part. I mean, the villains were villainous. The good guys were, you know, at least in that game there was only one protagonist and you can play him any way you like. You can play him as trying to be reformed or you can play him as a total bastard. And that was
You really surprised that a game named Grand Theft Auto didn't have good guy protagonists? I mean, you kind of had to know that these were not going to be nice people.
Well, no. I mean, it isn't that they have nice people. As a matter of fact, all of them call themselves assholes.
Yeah.
You know? But the thing is, you can play them as, you know, people who are trying to reform. You can play them as that. You know? And if you play as Trevor, there's nothing you can do. And it was so satisfying to shoot him in the head and have him set a fire by the gasoline. I laughed. Because here's the thing. Here's a guy that everybody's afraid of. But if you choose to kill Trevor, he's a total bitch. He runs away. And again, when in the entire game has he ever acted like that? When in the game has he ever been scared of one person with a handgun? Was that ever a threat to him during the game? No. But you picked to kill Trevor? Oh, now it is. Why would you run away in that situation? He would probably just shoot Franklin or do something and then eat him later.
I don't know.
The game is lazy. And the thing, like I said, the thing that I found the worst is that there's no consequences for your actions.
That's always been Rockstar Games, though.
No, that's not true.
It is true. That's always been true. Of, like, everything since Grand Theft Auto 1, there really is no consequence for, like, getting arrested or dying.
Yeah, I mean, the first
thing. You know what Saints Row did? It realized that its main character was a bastard, so what did they do? Well, they made it into a cartoon. In by 4, you're the president of the United States, and someone annoys you with their bill, you just punch them in the groin or punch them in the stomach. You know? And there is consequences because you're a terrible president. And then you go to hell, literally. And, you know, with the one thing I hate about the only thing I hate about Saints Row is they really think that Johnny Gat is an interesting character. That annoys it. That is character shilling to the max. At least Grand Theft Auto never does that. You know, they never think. At least I can say they never think that Trevor is the coolest character out there. And, you know, the thing, like I said, from what I said, you know, it's a really middle finger to people who play Grand Theft Auto, you know, who do that sort of stuff. They depict him as taking a shit in public because they have no, you know, self-control. I don't know. Like I said, Grand Theft Auto 5, they put all the work into making the city. And that's what I like the most about it. The city was really well realized. But you know what else I would like? Can we just go to real world locations now and stop making a fake location? Instead of Los Santos, make it Los Angeles?
I mean, clearly they've been able to do that before. They did that with L.A. Noire.
I mean, I don't know why. I mean, maybe it's because they have to shrink the cities down, you know? They can't have all of Los Angeles, but I don't care about that. If you take out Orange Street, North Orange Street, am I going to complain? No. You know, I mean, there are some trademarked locations like Grauman's Chinese Theater, but you don't have to call it Grauman's Chinese Theater. I don't know. Maybe it's because I lived in L.A. for 18 years, but I also lived in New York all my life, you know, and I don't care about Liberty City. And that also allowed them to take out Staten Island. They could have called it Wu-Tang.
I mean, if you look at Spider-Man on PS4, they most certainly did a lot of work on making stuff look like New York City there.
Well, they did it with The Division. The Division, what's it called? Actually, the entirety of The Division is in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. They did the same thing with Spider-Man, where like they have a lot of landmarks that people have called out in real life. That, like,
yeah, I know, but they went block by block with The Division to make it accurate, because they weren't trying to do all of New York. They were just trying to do a certain section of New York, which they did well, you know. I would like, you know, it would be nice if they made a shooter which takes place in a section of a city that you choose. Anyway, we've been talking about Grand Theft Auto 5 way too much. About a 6-year-old game. Oh, and by the way, the online component sucks balls too. I hated it.
Wow, people, I've heard rave reviews about.
I know they like
about
it. I hate it, you know, because I'm an adult. I am an adult. I don't do racial slurs. I don't do homophobic slurs. I don't grief. You know, it's just.
It is a griefer's paradise in Grand Theft Auto Online.
Yeah.
I haven't played it. I just heard people
like it.
Well,
they like it because they're terrible people. Or they're under the age of 13. I don't care. I would like for me to be able to register as someone over the age of 30 so that they can have special service for only people over the age of 30. I know there are incredibly immature people over the age of 30, but at least I won't have to deal with 15-year-olds. And get off my lawn. Get off from my lawn, you long-haired hippie! Anyways. I think you've talked about enough about that. Let's talk about the gaming flashback. And this week's gaming flashback, I'm pretty sure everybody and their mother have played. And if they haven't, they know about it. And this week's gaming flashback is Batman Arkham Asylum. Batman Arkham Asylum is a 2009 action-adventure video game developed by Rocksteady Studios and published by Eidos Interactive in conjunction with Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment. Based on the DC Comics superhero Batman and written by veteran Batman writer Paul Dini, Arkham Asylum is inspired by the long-running comic book mythos. In the game's main storyline, Batman's archenemy, the Joker, instigates an elaborate plot to seize control of Arkham Asylum and trap Batman inside with many of his incarcerated foes. With the Joker threatening to detonate hidden bombs around fictional Gotham City, yeah, we know it's fictional. Why did you have to mention that? Batman is forced to fight his way through the asylum's inmates and put an end to the Joker's plans. Most of the game's leading characters are voiced by actors who have appeared in the media based on Batman the Animated Series, including Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill, and Arlene Sorkin, who reprised their roles as Batman, the Joker, and Harley Quinn. The game is presented from the third-person perspective with a primary focus on Batman's combat and stealth abilities, detective skills, and gadgets that can be used in combat and exploration. Batman can freely move around the Arkham Asylum facility, interacting with characters and undertaking missions, and unlocking new areas by progressing through a main story or obtaining new equipment. The player is able to complete side missions away from the main story to unlock additional content and collectible items. The combat focuses on chaining attacks together and numerous foes while avoiding damage, while stealth allows Batman to conceal himself around an area using gadgets and an environment to silently eliminate enemies. We'll talk about the Predator mode in a moment. Arkham Asylum was released worldwide for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 on August 25th, 2009, followed by a Windows release on September 15th. The game got tons and tons and tons of acclaim, and deservedly so. And basically, you know what? When you were playing it, you were playing an episode of Batman the Animated Series, except without the cartoony art style and more of a real art style. Yeah, so this was not an open world game, but did allow you to explore to your content. You know, it just didn't move forward unless you did certain things. So, TJ, how much did you enjoy Batman Arkham Asylum?
I think that's the most interesting that anyone has ever made the Killer Croc. Like, otherwise, that is mostly a throwaway character, and they made that character, like, horribly menacing and terrifying in that
game.
The
only problem with that was, as Yahtzee Croshaw said, basically, your mission with him was just slapping him down with a newspaper. Every time that rubble came, you just threw your batarang in his face, and he fell back in the water. I mean, the last part was frightening. When you were running down the corridor, you had to spray the explosive gel on the floor so that you would just fall in. But yeah, any part. But you know, when you first meet, I love when you first see him, because in the beginning of the game, you're basically doing a tour of Arkham, right? And he's in chains, and he says, "Batman, I can smell you." You know,
yeah.
I made him 10 feet tall. Normally he's depicted like 8 feet tall, but they made him gigantic in this game.
Yes. Like, and so, like, again, that character is usually a throwaway. Nobody ever really gives much thought to Killer Croc, and they made him memorable. They made him really, really memorable in that game.
And then Suicide Squad made him unmemorable again. The other part that everybody remembers are the Scarecrow's parts, which are really frightening. The game changes its gameplay. You're no longer in a 3D environment. Now you're basically doing a 2.5D platformer. And what happens is, for those of you who haven't played the game, every time Batman gets misted with fear gas, he goes into this alternate world in which just everything. I mean, one of the most affecting parts is when he sees Commissioner Gordon dead on the floor, and he breaks down because he feels it's his fault that Commissioner Gordon was murdered. And, you know, the thing is that part is the psychological part. I mean, most of the game is psychology. The best part is the fake screen in which you first get gassed with tear gas. And now it's the Joker wheeling you into Arkham Asylum the same way that it was entered when he was being wheeled in. And, of course, in order to avoid the Joker shooting you, you have to press the middle button on your mouse. On your controller, you're supposed to move the middle stick. And on the mouse, you're supposed to tilt the mouse. Which, of course, is impossible to do. It's a fake death, you know, but it's still slightly hilarious.
Yes.
And then there's the Predator missions, which is the best part of the game, because it was the only game, and I know Spider-Man tried to do it, you know, and it failed. Because one thing, you know, every time you do a wave, more waves come in, which sucks. And Spider-Man is dressed in bright colors. You know, he's not a predator. With Batman, the thing I love about Batman is when you're picking off each one by one by one, they get more and more and more frightened. Until when you have one guy left, he's firing in random directions because he doesn't know where you are. That to me is the best part. That's a power trip right there, knowing that you're scaring the shit out of these people, especially if you've never revealed yourself, if you managed to stay hidden the entire time.
Yeah. They did a good job with this game, and I remember, like, this was the one where, like, everybody was like, they're doing a Batman game? Batman has such a bad history of video games.
Well, it isn't just that, but Rocksteady didn't have... made one game and it sucked before that. They made Urban Chaos Riot Response. Do you remember that game? That's why people had doubts about this game, you know. But
I think
I
think there's been good Batman games. How TJ's commenting about a bad history of, you know, Batman games.
There have been a handful, but like there was definitely
a handful, very few of them.
But there were definitely some stinkers as well. Like,
Well, here's the thing. A lot of them were movie tie-ins from the first Batman on, you know. Most of them are movie tie-ins, and they were just quick cash grabs, you know. This game was never said to be a Batman or animated series, although you had the writer and the actors from that series, you know. This was basically an original product, you know. I mean, it was based on two comic books, very loosely based on two comic books that took place in Arkham. And, oh, by the way, let's talk about the Riddler. This is the only time I actually enjoyed doing the Riddler puzzles in any of the Batman Arkham games.
I wasn't a fan. I really wasn't.
this one was actually a little bit more just find them, you know, not do special things to get them like you did in Arkham City.
There were definitely some ones that felt like video game homework or video game chores. And I feel like there was just some tough ones that just like some that were just like outlandishly annoying compared to like most of the ones that you pick up.
Really? Which ones? I think you're thinking of Arkham City, because in Arkham Asylum, the worst was that they were hidden. That was it. But it was so satisfying to get all of them and just hear the police break into the Riddler's place.
Yes, that was
importantly. Yeah, the more of those things you got, the more exasperated it got. Eventually, accuse you of cheating.
Yes, I did enjoy that. Like, I don't remember it being the worst, but I definitely feel like there were a few who were like, this sucks. Where is this? I don't like it.
Well, here's the thing. At least in this game, it gave you maps, so you knew where all of them were.
Right.
You know? And some of them were just tasks that you do, like destroying all of the Joker's chattering teeth.
Right. But no, I thought that this was incredibly handled. Like, even though it went with like sort of the grimdark nature that was made popular.
I mean, it was grimdark, actually, you know. It took place at night, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like Batman Arkham Origins, where it was dark and depressing.
They did a good job of mixing the current mood of Batman that was made by Christopher Nolan and taking that and putting it together with sort of like, You had a Joker that did look like menacing and terrifying, but also did look like the animated series Joker that we knew and loved.
I guess I don't think it was all that grim and dark. Here's the thing. It was fun, you know. It was fun. The story was fun. It wasn't depressing, you know. The only thing I didn't like was that it would have been really hard to duplicate Harley Quinn's outfit from the animated series. So this started the entire thing of making Harley Quinn into sexier and sexier outfits. You know, I preferred Harley, and this is the game that did it, by the way. This is the game that turned her from a goofy sidekick into a sex pot, you know. And if you've noticed, her breasts keep on getting bigger and bigger and bigger in the comics.
I don't know about that, because the animated series definitely had some of those moments, like Joker, you want to ride your Harley.
She was in a nightie. And a very covering nightie, too.
Yeah, it's still pretty sexy.
Yeah, but her breasts didn't expand constantly.
Okay, Jonah.
I'm sad. No. Look at Harley then in the anime series, and look at Harley in the comics now.
My wife and I talk about this all the time. There were definitely some Harley moments in the animated series that were like, that was probably not okay for kids.
Yeah, I mean, they were getting crap past the radar moments, yes. But she was always dressed the same way for the most part, you know. By the way, that episode that you're talking about, Mad Love, I actually bought the comic when it first came out, and they made that afterwards. So it wasn't really in line with the animated series, more in line with the comic, you know. The comic was a lot more adult, and they took some of the darker aspects out of the one shot Mad Love, you know, that they weren't going to put in a cartoon. So,
yeah, I wasn't a fan of Arkham Asylum's ending.
Really?
I think that I think that for as far as Joker went to like plot all this contrived scheming against Batman, the whole backed into a corner, injecting yourself with a horrible drug that turns you into a mutant was the least Joker thing they could have come up with.
What I liked, though, was the way when the game progressed, things kept on changing. Like, you know where he holds the final thing, right? You can see them slowly building up the entrance to the thing. And also, you'll notice that Batman's outfit gets more and more tears on it, you know, until it's like pieces are hanging off it.
I think they could have done that far better than that. They could have handled the Joker at the end far better than they did. Like, that's his trump card. Put a horrible mutating drug in his body and fight Batman as like another Bane.
Hey, at least it led to Arkham City's plot, in which they had the balls to kill off the Joker.
Yes, that is true. That was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Arkham City's story, but it became too open world. See, here's the thing about Batman Arkham Asylum. It was open enough that you felt freedom, but it had a linear story, you know, which allowed it to have the tight story. Now, before we move on, we have to talk about the one thing from the game that changed the entire industry when it came to brawlers, and that is the Batman Arkham Asylum combat. We all know it now. I'm going to use the Xbox controls. X to strike, Y to counter, B to stun, A to jump. You know, and then the triggers for whatever device you're using. Every game has adopted that system because it is so good. And that's the thing that people love the most. When you're fighting big groups of mooks as the joke, as Batman, it made his combat feel plausible and badass at the same time. Also, here's the thing. Guns can kill you. He's not bulletproof. When someone pulls out a gun, you have to take care of him first, or else you're going to be in for a lot of pain.
Yes. Batman Arkham Asylum's combat was so iconic that I'm sorry to say it, but Spider-Man copied it entirely.
A lot of games copied it. The one game that copied it unabashedly yet added new stuff to it was Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War. They took the Batman combat. They didn't care they were copying it, and they added a lot more stuff into it that actually molds right into it, you know. I mean, Italian has his own devices, but he has some powers like and here's the other thing. If you did button combos, you did, like, I believe if you did AX at the same time, he would throw batarangs all around himself to stun everybody, that sort of stuff. And you could include your weapons. Like, if you had the grappling hook, right, you could actually use the grappling hook in combat to pull one guy over to you and just knock him senseless. I never did the other stuff. I never was able to use the explosive gel in combat. I did it once or twice, but it's really hard to do. It was hard to do for me, at least.
I actually did the combat challenges all the way to the end. So, like, I figured out how to do all that stuff, like the gel, the grappling hook takedown, all of the batarang stuff. And, yeah, it was tough, but it was satisfying when you would do some of that. Like, if anyone forget, you had to build up your combo meter in order to use certain things.
And light RPG moments. Like, initially you had to build it up to 8 in order to use combos, but you could get an ability which lowered it down to 5. And let's talk about that for a moment, because aside from the single player campaign, it also had two different types of campaigns in which you just did combat and just did the Predator missions. And it extended the life immensely because everybody was trying their best up their score, you know.
Yeah.
Do it without getting touched. Do it without, you know, and all that stuff, you know.
Oh, God. Like I said, I did every one of those combat challenges all the way to the end with three bats.
It was three bats. You got one bat, two bat, three bat.
Some of those were just like hair pulling difficult, but like when it got done, it was so frenetic and you just like felt like a whirlwind. And like getting to the moments where you would use when you were in a tight spot and you'd be able to use that like super important takedown was so immensely satisfying.
I was more of a Predator guy. I preferred the Predator missions.
I yelled out loud when I completed those, combat missions with three stars.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the news. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Microsoft unveils discless Xbox One all-digital edition for $249. From The Verge. Microsoft is making its discless Xbox One official today. After weeks of leaks, the software maker is unveiling the Xbox One S all-digital, which is priced at $249 and will be available on May 7th. This is a new model that will be sold alongside the original Xbox One S and the more powerful Xbox One X. The big selling point here is that this all-digital edition will not ship with the Blu-ray drive, cutting the price slightly by $50, recommended retail price. Microsoft is including a 1 terabyte hard disk drive on this new digital model alongside digital versions of Forza Horizon 3, Sea of Thieves, and Minecraft in the box. The hardware is exactly the same as existing Xbox One S consoles, just without the 4K Blu-ray drive. Microsoft is clearly testing out the idea of digital-only consoles, which was part of the original version for the Xbox One. Microsoft had originally planned to let Xbox One users share any games digitally, but a backlash over the used games policies and online check forced the company to reverse most of its more promising plans. Microsoft has been aggressively pushing its Xbox Game Pass recently, a subscription service that provides access to more than 100 Xbox games. Xbox Game Studio titles like Sea of Thieves and Crackdown 3 launched first on the service. Microsoft even recently added Minecraft to Xbox Game Pass. A discless console with a digital Xbox Game Pass subscription is now a reality. Microsoft is also working on an xCloud game streaming service that will stream digital games to PCs, consoles, and mobile devices.
Yeah, this is a big mistake. And not the concept of a discless Xbox, but really? $250? That much? Number one? And here's the other thing, is that they're clearly saving, because if you're going to remove the disk drive, at least make it smaller, because these are the exact same size of the Microsoft Xbox One S's, just without a disk drive. Let me give you an example. You can get right now a an Xbox One S for $208 packed in with the Division 2. Why would you buy something without a disk drive if you're going to sell it for $249? I mean, I'm pretty sure stores will lower the price, but they could have done so much more here. Make it a $200 thing. Make it smaller. You can make it as small as a GameCube, for crying out loud, if you remove the drive. You know, just make it something that looks different, and it's just a wasted opportunity here.
Yeah, it's interesting to release a console that late, that price this late in the Xbox One's life. I mean, we're literally looking at this year for them to show they're probably going to show the new Xbox at E3, right?
Hey, so coming around my way of thinking, or a lot of people's way of thinking, because you said the last podcast, I don't know.
I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea. I just think that it's a bad idea to launch at that kind of price.
Well, here's the thing. It's the Xbox One S. It's, you know, the original Xbox One, not the X, but, you know, the original Xbox One, which the S essentially is basically becoming a dinosaur. No one cares. You know, it's – people are buying the Xbox One X now, you know. But I would think if you're going to do this, make it smaller, you know, and make it cheaper. And really, two of the games that they're including on the drive are games as service games, Sea of Thieves and Minecraft. And Forza Horizon 3? When Forza Horizon 4 is the hot new, you know, the hot new hotness right now? You'd think they want to release Forza Horizon 4 on this thing because people who already own an Xbox One already own Forza Horizon 4. You know, this people who don't own it will want to play Forza Horizon 4. They're going cheap with this. I don't understand it. Go all the way.
I didn't even think about the fact that it was an older version of Forza Horizon. I kind of thought that was the newest one.
No, it's Forza Horizon 4 is the new one.
That would be like, that makes no sense to me. Why would you not put Forza Horizon 4 on it?
I don't know.
What do people gain from playing a older generation of a game that, like,
basically nobody really can't play movies on it? You know, here's the thing. You're asking people, okay, you're not going to play movies on this. So what are we going to offer you to make up for that, you know? $249 is way too expensive for this.
Right? You can't get Netflix or YouTube on this thing?
But here's the thing, is that it's more expensive than some Xbox One S's, which do come with a game and will come with a hard drive. You have to convince someone you're going to be giving up playing the discs that you own, right? So here's what we're going to give you instead. And, you know, Minecraft and Sea of Thieves are both games as services. And Minecraft less than Sea of Thieves. But Sea of Thieves is definitely a games as service thing. Microsoft really wants you to buy that Xbox Live thing so you can play it. I don't know. I'm hoping that when they unveil the discless version of whatever the next console is going to be, let's call it the Xbox 2, let's hope that they make it physically different, you know, and much cheaper, like $100 cheaper than the full Xbox 2. Because here's the thing that the Xbox 2 is not going to have. It's not going to have Kinect. So you can make it cheaper. So say $400 for an Xbox 2 and $300 for an Xbox 2 discless. That's the other thing, too. What about the games that you already own that are on disc?
I mean,
yeah, I know there's going to be a lot of people that are against this. So they want their physical media. And
I know some people who haven't bought a disc for their consoles in years now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying here, the Xbox 2 is going to be 100% backwards compatible with the Xbox One. We know this. We already know this. So if you have an Xbox One and they want to get you to buy the Xbox 2 without the disc, how are you going to say, well, I own this game? Are you going to have to ship in the disc to get a code for it? What's the deal? And that's going to be the confusing part.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, who is this for, do you think?
Well, here's the thing. I would want the Xbox 2 Digital to be really inexpensive to track people who didn't own an Xbox before to get an Xbox. You know, and that's the entire thing about, you know, Xbox Game Pass, you know, not Game Pass, but, you know, the streaming service, because, you know, Microsoft wants you to be able to play your Xbox games on a Switch. They want you to play on a PS4 or 5 if Sony agrees to it. You know, they want games as service now, you know, for streaming. So we'll see. I mean, like I said, the Xbox One S all digital are for people who haven't played any Xbox, you know, haven't played any Xbox, and it comes with, and, you know, it came with Minecraft for a reason. It comes with Minecraft for a reason. It comes with Sea of Thieves for a reason. Those are good entry-level games to people who generally don't play console games or haven't played any Microsoft console games.
Yeah, it should have been Forza Horizon 4, but otherwise I think Sea of Thieves and Minecraft are good inclusions. I don't think it's a bad idea to, like, test the waters. I just question the way that they're going about it.
I just, you know, here's the thing. I think it's the way things are going to be. You know, at some point, it's just going to be all digital. And God help us, all streaming probably at some point, which I hope doesn't happen. I mean, PCs will never do that. I mean, you'll always have hard drive to download stuff onto your PC. I don't know what's going to happen with consoles. You know, consoles may vanish and we'll be just have streaming stuff left. We don't know. You know, that box on your TV might just become something that streams games. which won't be so bad if when, you know, we have 5G networks and all that stuff, you know, when everybody's able to do it. We'll see. I just think they could have done better, you know. It seems to me like they're just remaindering the rest of the Xbox One S, you know, hardware, you know, the chassis. Because why wouldn't you make it smaller? Just make it as small as possible. That'll attract people. Sell for $200, sell as small as possible, then you can put whatever garbage you want on the hard drive. You know, I would have said, you know what, let's make a deal with Konami. Or is it Konami? No, it's Capcom. Let's make a deal with Capcom and have one of the games be Resident Evil 2 remastered.
I'll tell you this. My brother is one of those people that, like, is a generation behind, purposefully so. He doesn't buy consoles until, like, they're probably, like, $50, and he can just buy the games for it. Like, he just bought Skyrim, I think, at the beginning of Elder Scrolls Skyrim at the beginning of this year. And so that's been a fun time, like, him discovering all that stuff and sharing it with me.
Well, at least now there's a fucking crap ton of mods for it.
That said, like, at this point, like, if we're getting to the point where they're just, like, going to sell digital models that you can't buy games on, like, the games are only available digitally and you have to buy a subscription service and be online. I don't think he's going to do that because, like, his whole thing has been, like, I don't want to pay. I don't have time to play these games.
You don't need a subscription to buy games for discless. You can just go to the store and buy them digitally. And here's the thing. I play, you know, I'm playing games that I don't have to – that, you know, they're discless a lot more in my Xbox One because I don't want to get up and have to put a disc in the drive. I'm lazy.
Right. I just don't think that he's going to pay that, like – I don't think he's gonna pay $250 for a 6-year-old console, and then also not be able to buy the games on the cheap.
Well, you can just get an Xbox One S. They're cheap now. Like I said, you can get one $208 with a new game on it from a lot of online retailers. Like I said, it'll be interesting to see if this sells. And you know, even though I think it's not a very good deal, you know, I'm hoping it does sell, because it would be nice to have in the next console generation, when Microsoft and Sony pimp out their new things, that they have two SKUs, one with a drive and the other one without a drive, so that if you can't afford a console for that much, well, I can't afford $400, but I can afford $300 and just buy my games online. People are used to buying games online now. It's not a boogeyman as it once was. Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Scott, go ahead.
Sure. Okay, Western Final Fantasy X2 requires Descartes on Switch. Remember Project 10 dollar online passes circa 2019? I'm sorry, 2010. They were a draconian concept primarily adopted by EA, Sony, and WB, among others. That would provide a content code or strip something crucial out to sell as a bonus for the new copies. The idea was to fight the used game industry, but thanks to a bunch of people speaking out against it and the rise of digital sales, it pretty much died. Well, this instance isn't quite Project $10, but it's giving off the same vibes. To recap, if you buy Final Fantasy X or Final Fantasy X-2 on Switch as an Asian region physical purchase, it'll contain both games on the same cart with multiple languages. In the West, only 10 is on the cart, 10-2 is download. What Square Enix has seemingly done is tie Final Fantasy X and X-2 together as one download, with the latter serving as what is basically DLC for the former. Meaning even if you redeem the X-102 download code packed with the Western edition of the physical version, you still need the game card to play it. If you trade it in, you can't play the downloaded 10-2. Nintendo has proven that it's possible to not make individual games so codependent on Switch. Bayonetta 1 was offered as a download in a package deal with Bayonetta 2 and was able to function even without the card. Nintendo has provided the ability to play Torna expansion for Xenoblade Chronicles 2 as a standalone experience with physical release.
So basically what they're doing is if you buy Final Fantasy X or Final Fantasy X used, you can't play X2. You can't play 10-2. Sorry. You don't have the code. And you need the card. It's just sleazy.
I don't know. I've heard that 10-2 is pretty much a really bad sequel.
That reminds me of the cable episode from The Simpsons, in which they were justifying stealing cable. One of them was, fact, most movies are under 2 stars, so who cares if you're stealing them?
I wasn't talking about stealing. I was just saying that it's like in good old games, they package King's Quest 8 with 7 just to sell 8. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter since it's a digital thing, but still, I don't think anyone would want to buy 8, let alone Final Fantasy 10.
I mean, in this case, they're selling Final Fantasy X2 HD Remastered as a bundle on everything, like PC. And it isn't because I think X2 is a lesser game. They're just, supplying the entire thing together as one story.
That's fine.
Just separating them like this, and forcing you to it's just punishing you, And I hate it when legitimate purchasers are treated like criminals. Because I'm going to give them a hint, and, pirates are going to crack your game. Just admit it. It's going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. Just write it off as a loss. And don't treat your every customer like they're a potential pirate.
Yeah. Do you remember how up in arms people got when they started putting what was the one super supposedly uncrackable software guard that couldn't be pirated?
Securom, I think it was.
It became a thing where every time that somebody heard that a game was
they would announce this game uses Securom or whatever the thing was.
And the community would be so pissed about it, I don't feel like this is that all different. If people want to pirate a game, they're gonna figure out a way to do it, regardless of how much you paid them to protect it. But so I'm not saying it's a lost cause, but I am saying that going this far out of the way to be to police your paying customers is I don't know about that.
Yeah, Sekiromo was the one that people just went up in arms of when it was announced that BioShock or Spore or Dragon Age 2 had Sekiromo, people just lost their shit about it. So just remember, don't copy that floppy.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
I don't know. It's just sleazy, and I don't know how much more we could talk about, so we're just going to move on to the next item. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order dev explains why it's a single-player game, and this comes from some Gaming Bolt. A lot has been said about the single-player nature of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, a game that completely eschews multiplayer and microtransactions. Developers Respawn Entertainment have had a lot to say about this story and the focus it places on narrative, but why exactly is a game being published by EA and being developed by a studio owned by them decided to take that route? According to narrative lead Aaron Contreras, while speaking in the latest episode of Inside Xbox, a single-player experience was what was the best fit for a Star Wars game, as in their view, what audiences want from Star Wars game is something that only a single-player game can deliver properly. I'm pretty sure the people who developed Star Wars Battlefront 2 enjoy hearing that from Respawn. Contreras said, when we look at Star Wars and we look at what people want out of a Jedi-focused game, it's the story. It's a battle of light and darkness. It's falling in love with the character and the setting in a world or worlds inside Star Wars and just going on an amazing adventure. And we felt we could best serve that demand with a single-player game that really just let players kind of immerse themselves inside Star Wars. Even though the focus of Fallen Order is completely on its story and there are no multiplayer modes to speak of, we recently learned that the game will have some sort of optional online elements in play. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order will be out on November 15th for PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Now, for those who don't know who Respawn are, they used to be Infinity Ward, and they're basically viewed as one of the best developers out there, alongside people like Monolith. Because whatever games they make, the worst you can say about them is that they're fun and they have great mechanics. Look at Titanfall, for an example A, you know. And, you know, I wouldn't mind a Star Wars version of Titanfall at all. That's probably not what it's going to be, since it says Star Wars Jedi. I don't expect the giant mech robot to be wielding a lightsaber, but... Did you see the trailer, TJ?
The trailer for Star Wars? I haven't seen the trailer for this one yet. Like,
It's very generic, but it does, you know, it does do what it's supposed to.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how it goes. Like, I'm in on a Star Wars single player game. I was very, 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 very concerned when I saw a headline recently that said Star Wars single player game is going to play like Dark Souls, which made me frown heavily because that is not what you want out of a Star Wars game.
If there's a licensed property that could do Dark Souls, though, you might do it with a Jedi with his lightsaber. I mean, you can see that happening.
Those Super Nintendo Star Wars games were very
Super
difficult.
Difficult as hell. But here's the thing. Dark Souls isn't just about being difficult. It's about tactical combat. It's about, you know, learning combinations, learning patterns and all that stuff. You know, it's a lot of reacting and acting as soon as possible. Like I said, I could see a Star Wars Dark Souls game. But I don't know. It's not Respawn's game. It's not their
deal.
Trust
me when I say that that's not what you want out of a Star Wars game.
Here's
like,
the thing.
As somebody who's played plenty of those, that is a bad idea.
Here's the thing. You know what kind of respect Respawn gets? When they announced EA is promising a new Star Wars game, people go, oh, it's being developed by Respawn. Oh. It's like... All I have to do is say Respawn is developing and say, okay, I'll give it a chance.
I do like the single-player Star Wars games, but I would like an RPG Star Wars game. I don't think I'll ever get one, but, you know, never know.
You know,
I'm not saying an action RPG game isn't bad. I'm saying if it's like Dark Souls, then that's going to turn some people off just because, like, it should not be as hard as a Dark Souls game.
I think they were using it like a buzzword. You know, like you were saying,
oh, yeah.
TJ.
That's very also likely that they were like every action game now is Dark Souls, basically.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking if they're going to have an optional online element, I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts is probably co-op. And having a co-op Jedi game, that would be interesting, too, because one Jedi
by
himself is really powerful. Having two on a field. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun, and you know, you'd have different kinds of challenges. You could actually work together, kind of like in Portal 2, where you had to work together to solve puzzles, and you would use your force powers, and it would be like just a new experience. So that would be fun. I don't know if they'll do it, but because they said single player, so
online. Or maybe, one thing about Respawn is they're really story-focused, so I'm wondering if the online element might be just new missions pop up. The one thing I'm hoping it's not is an open-world game, because I couldn't think of anything more boring than a Jedi open-world game.
Yeah. I mean, I would be into something like the old Jedi Knight games, but done in like a 2019 veneer. Like, I really enjoyed the Jedi Knight games. Those were fun.
I miss Dark Forces, damn it. I want Dark Forces back. Dark Forces is a lot better than that Star Wars movie about getting the plans to the Death Star. I mean, the Dark Forces was actually fun.
Are you talking about Shadows of the Empire?
No, the movie.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot what it was called. It wasn't Solo. It was the other one.
Rogue One.
What a dour, gray movie that was. But we're not going to get into movie reviews right now. But like I said, it's Respawn, and they're basically known for doing shooters, right? They're the ones who did the first Medal of Honor, which was critically acclaimed, and then when they... And when they were kicked out of EA and they went to Activision, they formed Infinity Ward, and they made the first couple of Call of Duty games. And then they were kicked out of Activision, and they went back to EA, and they became Respawn. So it'll be very interesting to see what they do. Most of their games have been first-person, you know, multiplayer shooters. I mean, yeah, they had strong single-player campaigns. I mean, just look at Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. But they're not really known for doing melee combat, which is, when if you have a Jedi game, it's going to insist that you do melee combat. The lightsaber is not a ranged weapon. It can be, thrown, but it's not a gun.
That's true. You can reflect shots back, so that helps. But it is definitely challenging to use a lightsaber.
It's be interesting what story we're following too. Actually, I heard somewhere there was going to be a new Kyle Katarn game. Not this one, of course. But it'd be interesting to see if Kyle Katarn comes back.
So Fallen Order, the whole thing about it, though, right, is that it follows Order 66, correct?
It takes place between movies 3 and 4, right?
You're supposed to be a Jedi that survived Order 66. So I'm curious about, like, are you supposed to be a Jedi? Is that confirmed?
I don't know. I mean, assume, okay, maybe. So, I mean, here's the thing. I'm just hoping it isn't a Clone Wars sort of thing. I know people like the cartoon, but let's start something new here.
Isn't that like Force Unleashed? That was also between movies 3 and 4.
I never heard of that game.
It's
a willful I never heard of that game. It means I don't want to remember that game.
okay.
So if it's going to be a Dark Souls-esque game, I think my hope would be you're not necessarily confirmed to be a Jedi. Because then you could maybe start as like a bounty hunter.
Oh god, that's
If I don't get to be a Jedi, then I'm not interested.
Well, I mean, you can be force sensitive and develop powers.
I was gonna say I would hope for a game that like you can be a number of different classes, where you start out as either like a Jedi who survived the Order or a bounty hunter that was working with the.
How about this? Why not play a Sith character who reforms?
That would be a possibility. Yeah, I just feel like you in this case, in this inverse situation about Grand Theft Auto V is I want my Jedi to be, or I want my Star Wars character to be a good character, likable, and
no,
be a hero.
I want my character to be someone I wouldn't that actually is intelligent, and
yeah,
you know, or at least you know behaves believably. If I'm going to play a bastard, you know, that's fine. But don't make me try and convince me that I have to like being that bastard. You know? I mean, there are games like Overlord, which you can either be evil or pure evil.
Right.
I mean, you played that. I haven't played the RPG yet, but, you know, that game. Oh, damn. What was the name of the isometric RPG again? In which you play an evil character? Tyranny?
Oh, Tyranny, yeah.
I wouldn't mind playing Tyranny. Because you make choices there.
Yes,
and the choices
you
are yours.
You can side with certain factions and apparently help the rebels.
Or you know, or you can be evil, but mm-hmm. Here's the thing. When I played Star Wars The Old Republic, I played the Imperial Agent, you know? And I had a rocking good time because you could put lights. Here's the thing. He could have a light-sided one, but that didn't mean he wanted to become a rebel, although there is an option late in the game, I understand, to do that. But his opinion is that we need the Empire, legitimately needs to keep order, you know, and we don't need people rocking the boat, you know, and they despise the Sith because they're basically elephants running around in an antique store. They have to control these guys who just murder people for fun, you know, and all that stuff. So while I was playing on the Empire's side, I wasn't playing an evil person per se. And by the way, even if I took the dark side points, they were still pragmatic stuff that just basically didn't care about who he was hurting. He was just doing it for a reason, and it was a good reason, you know. So you can play an evil character. You can even play a total shitbag. Just make it that, you know, you have some agency in what that character does. Or if you don't, just at least don't make me feel stupid. Because when I played Trevor, I felt like I was getting as stupid as he was. And it was getting away with shit that normally would never happen, you know?
I just hope that there's a multiple, like, there's multiple possibilities in a game like this. I hope, like, it would be cool to see if, I don't know
Hey, look, we just talked about how great Batman Arkham Asylum was. You have no say in how Batman behaves. You only have say in the way he fights and all that stuff. There are no moral choices in that. And I was fine with it because I was following a story I really, really liked, you know? And people didn't do stupid things in there. The Joker didn't do stupid things, except maybe inject himself a Titan. I mean, but that's debatable because he's insane, you know? Actually, his main goal was to inject Batman with Titan. And he did, didn't he? I think he did. And Batman just kept his sanity, you know? He ejected him, said, no, you're not going to make me turn. No, you're not going to make me turn. I'm going to make sure that I don't turn through sheer force of will. I think that's what happened in Batman Arkham Asylum, didn't it? But, you know, everything that Killer Croc does, you know, it's not stupid. Everything that Harley Quinn does, you know, she's stupid, but she still knows, you know, and, you know, the Scarecrow isn't stupid. Even the here's the thing about the Riddler. He just has a massive ego and he thinks he's smarter than you. And when you show that he's not as smart as he thinks he is, he just goes into a villainous breakdown, you know. But like I said, none of the characters make me feel like they would behave, you know, that makes me believe that what they're doing is what the only thing they can do in this situation. I don't care if there's no moral choices in Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. I don't care, as long as it's a good story.
Yeah, I want that too, a good story.
Yeah. And I guess to that extent, I think of Titanfall 2, and like that's kind of what Respawn is used to as far as crafting these stories. It's just like this creating a good character and creating a good roller coaster to put that character on.
The story in Titanfall 2 was generic and incredibly corny, but they still made it work. You know? Oh, I lost my pilot. Well, I guess you're going to be my pilot for now, even though you're not ready for it. Oh, we're bonding as robot and man. A man and his robot. Incredibly corny, but I enjoyed the story.
BT was wonderful. I love BT.
And, you know, and I think that's one of the things we can count on from Rockstar. At least we're going to get some interesting characters.
I look forward to this game. I like, yeah, this will be a fun game, I think.
Yeah, and yeah. It's a single player game, and it'll be interesting to see how much it costs, because they're not going to have the multiplayer, you know, microtransaction system to bolster the. I wonder if it's because it is Respawn and they own the studio, and I'm willing to bet you they're going to be using Titanfall assets. Or at least I hope they do, because I swear, you know, I don't know if we talked about this article, but they talked about how DICE's engine, the Frostbite engine, just ruined a lot of games because it wasn't meant for RPGs and it wasn't meant for a lot of things. And they just try to shoehorn that engine into everything. And developing doesn't work that way, fellas. You can't use that for everything. So they had to redo all this simple stuff, and stuff changes that would normally take like an hour would take a week with Frostbite. So I hope Respawn is using their own Titanfall engine, you know, and they're using their own stuff. And maybe it can be cheaper because they're, you know, EA already owns them, you know. They're not farming this out to anybody. The only thing that EA probably is paying for is the Star Wars license.
Oh, I think... chance of the Star Wars game, like Apex Legends, is still fun. I wish they would update it more, but otherwise, they've been doing a lot of good work recently, and I don't think they've really put out anything that anyone would consider subpar.
Yeah, well, you know, that rumored Titanfall game is coming out, so hopefully, you know, crossing your fingers. Really, I haven't played Apex Legends though.
I heard today that they pushed back Titanfall plans in order to focus.
Well, if they're gonna do Star Wars, they're gonna push that back. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I'm at Johnny Chug.
I'm at Al Pouchard.
And I'm going to say, if you haven't played Batman Arkham Asylum, play it. It still holds up. As a matter of fact, they have the remastered version out with the other three games, which is interesting. It includes Batman Arkham Asylum, Batman Arkham City, and Batman Arkham Knight, and notably not including Origins, which I guess, since it's not a Respawn game, they just said, nope, it's not one of ours. You know what's really sad? The way the series mutated into Batman Arkham Knight. And that's when people started getting stupid. Because here's the thing. One, it's a stealth game with a tank. And the thing that always amused me, and everybody was quick to say this, you know, if Jason Todd really wanted a flummox Batman, he would just tie people to those tanks. Why have unmanned tanks? If you put hostages inside the tanks, Batman's not going to blow them up. He's going to try and save them.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by insulting my intelligence.
You're not a fan of Affleck Batman, who just basically shoots people with guns?
Here's the thing. I don't like Zack Snyder's Batman, but Batfleck was pretty good in terms of the look, the movement, the personality. That was fine. I wouldn't mind seeing him as a Batman for a while. The problem is he had an objectivist Anne Ryan person governing his actions. You know.
It made me think of that College Humor skit where with Patton Oswalt as the Penguin, where he's just murdering people. He's like, he's just sleeping. He's all tuckered out. You slit his throat!
Batman doesn't use a gun. This is a gun? that reminds me of Hishi, How It Should Have Ended, and the superhero cafe segments. I like the villain bar, but I really like the superhero cafe in which Batman and the Superman are just laying back, having coffee, and just chatting. Yeah, that's for those who don't know, go to How It Should Have Ended and just watch those videos. They're hilarious. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.